Tanse, hello and welcome. You're listening to Voices of Our People on the Wind Speaker Radio Network. I'm Daniel Barker Tromblay, and it's Seagot Soon. On today's episode of Voices of Our People, I continue my conversation with Ashley Colley-Bull from Enoch Cree Nation in Northern Alberta. You know, with a lot of those firsts, you know, that you've done thus far, I have to ask, what was your mindset when you got the call saying, hey, Ashley, we want you to be featured in Sports Illustrated, being the first ever Indigenous woman to be featured in Sports Illustrated?
Oh, I was so proud. I just remember I got the call almost like 6 months if it was going to I was going to get chosen or not. Like, you're just happy and very, you know, open to any kind of opportunity with them. And when I got the call, I remember I was so happy. I thought I was still dreaming and sleeping. I rolled over and cried to my husband. I was so happy. And it didn't even sink in when I got there. I just thought oh my God, I can't believe I'm shooting Sports Illustrated. This is all the big supermodels have done this. It's just crazy because, you know, it always comes back to me being who I was in the reserve. And I would have never imagined these things for myself. And now that these things are happening, it's because I changed my mentality when I was in high school to really push for who I'm going to be 5 years from now. That's the type of mentality I had, was who am I going to be? Am I going to be the best version of myself? How hard am I going to work? You know, I kept thinking of the future. So with that mentality now, I'm I can't imagine where I'm going to be 5 years from now.
And of course, with that mentality, it also took you to many places, as well as, you know, going with your stepfather, Joel, on The Amazing Race Canada. Talk about your experience in that show.
That was the best. So, one of the craziest things I've ever seen on that show. And when we finally got on, I remember, doing things that I would never do on my own time. I would never bungee jump mountains. I wouldn't try it again twice, and I did a bat and live bugs and all these things on my own. I never thought I could learn to fly a warplane within a certain amount of time and do it on that. I thought I wasn't on that show. I realized that I am limitless. I realized that, if I set limits for myself, then that's where, my dream. I start thinking I can accomplish anything on the other side of fear, then of course, why not? Why can't I? And because of that show, it's really opened my eyes to seeing things differently in the world, also embracing and just having a fearless attitude of look next, what can I overcome? So that show was amazing. I highly recommend that for anyone who wants to see the world in a different way and just have an amazing.
And, I always used to watch that show and be like, Dad, let's do this. And he'd be like, no, I could run faster than you. But I have to ask as well, as a motivational speaker as yourself and an advocate for Indigenous culture, what does National Indigenous Peoples Day mean to you, Ashley?
It's a great day to celebrate all of us, where we come from, the beauty of our culture, the strength from it. But to we are still here. That's what I think is the most powerful part about it, is that not only are we showing all the Canadians, but also showing them that, yes, they can be an ally. They can learn to educate themselves instead of having that separation. So that day is a big day. I wish we could celebrate all year. I mean, you can celebrate being Indigenous every day, but not just for the celebration of us and who we are, and for those who want to take part and learn more about us. That's just such a beautiful day to celebrate.
And of course, now can you talk about the importance of getting more involved with Indigenous culture and the teachings that follow with it, and how it could, build a person's character even more, let alone teach you life lessons as well?
Yeah, all my friends that are non-Indigenous, I would say, are an amazing ally, because they take the time to. It's not up to Indigenous people to teach you everything. resources or places that you can learn or things that you can read up on your own. But it's really up to the person to really take part and to learn. Friends, for example, who aren't Indigenous so much on their own, they've even done the free courses online that you can do at the University of Alberta, and anyone can do that. You know, they go out of like Indigenous artists, Indigenous brands, art and powwows and events that, you know, things that my family has had, and they've really like wanted to learn, and they realize that like everyone is family. And they realized like how welcoming it was. You know, people get nervous, especially if they're not Indigenous. They're like, are we okay to go to a powwow? You know, are we okay to take part in intertribals? Like, to send. But that's the number one thing is all you got. First thing you got to do is ask. And then then you're past it all. And then they realize that, yes, we want you to take part. Yes, we want you to be allies so we can move together, and all they got to do is take that.
And of course, you know, from what I've seen thus far over the past year, is a lot of good stuff, especially with the language. You know, I sat down with Fawn Wood, and she was able to, basically bring the language within to music, not only just herself, but a lot of others as well. When you see the language being, introducted into the world of music and even acting, like, you know, I spoke with Wayne Jackson. He said that we're in a day and age now where we can look at Prey and just say, okay, let's just ask them, like, hey, like, we have a Cree speaker like Wayne Jackson who can just basically narrate the male parts within the movie entirely in the Cree language. And, of course, Peter Pan and Wendy that just came out, they actually spoke the language. What's your take on all that?
I think it's so amazing. Like, Fawn is amazing, and also Alyssa, who plays... she plays Tiger Lily in the Peter Pan film, speaking Cree. Like, that's so beautiful to see because, you know, that's my language. And never would you imagine, like, Disney would do something like that. And to see it now, it's like, okay, perfect. There is that proper representation that we need. And to also show that, yes, we can be mainstream. We're not like these characters in a movie, you know what I mean? When people think of us, they always think of stereotypes. But to see us in these mainstream spaces, that's where we need to be. That's where we need to be at the head of the table, is, you know, making decisions and saying, yes, we're going to be doing it this way because this is the right way. So when I see like Fawn and Melissa doing these amazing things, I'm like, there's so many other outlets that we can be doing it as well. And like, for example, them doing Cree for NHL games, that itself is like major. So us dominating all these spaces, we need more of that.
And, you know, I spoke with, a woman that's very well known within the photography world by the name of Candace Ward. I asked her the similar question, and she said it's harder for, you know, not only just women, but Indigenous women and Indigenous peoples to get into the world of just broadcasting or journalism or even photography, the world of sports. You had mentioned this earlier that stuff like that needs to be, either changed or it needs to be better. Would you agree that it needs to be better as well in that aspect to see more Indigenous be represented within the world of sports?
Oh, 100%. We need it. And I would 100% agree with her that it's harder being a woman in sports, but even harder being an Indigenous woman in sports, because a lot of people don't think that you might be relatable, which is terrible to say. And I've heard that from people before, saying, oh, we don't think she'll be relatable because she's Indigenous and she's a woman. And that's the kind of thing we need to change, is that outlook on us women. We definitely need more programs. We need more spaces for us, because there are so many women that chase their dream of sport. It doesn't have to be like, you know, always about men. There are so many female sports athletes that are just phenomenal and amazing. And there's women who are broadcasters, you know, in-game hosts, people that are producers in the background. We definitely need that more representation. And I think that it would be better if we had more accessibility and more programs for us, instead of making it more male focused. Like, women are really coming up and showing everyone, like, this is how it's done.
And of course, I could agree with you more because, you know, when I started school up in Saint, that like being the only Indigenous student as well in my graduating class, I remember I was in my fourth year and I got pulled into my instructor's office and all of the instructors for my program were in that office. And I was thinking, am I in trouble? What's going on? And I had just gotten a job with Windspeaker. And I remember they asked me, they go, Daniel, we need your help. And I said, okay, well, what would you need my help for? I'm about to graduate. I didn't say that, but I was like, what can I do you for? And they said, well, how can we inspire more Indigenous people to get into the world of broadcasting for news, for sports, for weather? How can we do that? How can we get the message out there that this is something that if they aspire to, you know, because Indigenous, and this is what was said to me, word for word, they said, Indigenous people are known to be storytellers. How can we let them know they can be paid to be storytellers? And I said, well, I didn't know this was a feasible thing. I thought you had to be a retired athlete or you had to be a superstar in some capacity to get the job, but I was completely wrong when it was looking at me dead in the face. I spoke with David Lannis, who runs College of Sports Media, your ticket to the big show. Spoke with him for 45 minutes, and I was like, I'm invested. I want to go to this school. Once he said it was in Toronto, and there's no housing, and you have to pay for this much amount for the tuition, and plus to find a place in Toronto, I was like, yeah, okay, maybe not so much. Is there something like that in Alberta? He said, go to Saint. And I said, okay, went there throughout the pandemic. And next thing you know, one thing led to another. Now, I have to ask you as well, you know, you said about making connections and stuff like that in this world, but it doesn't have to just be in this world. It could be in any kind of aspect in whatever job title you decide to do. I have to ask you as well, what are some, you know, you had mentioned earlier, you faced some adversities and stuff like that, and you overcame them. What would your advice be to overcome adversity?
Well, for me, whenever I'm overcoming adversity and I'm dealing with something, you know, I know that I'm going to learn from that experience and I'm going to grow stronger. And I know when I experience these things, it's almost like I feel like I'm being tested. You know, I feel like I experienced so much adversity in my life, not just from being a woman, but from being Indigenous and also from people telling me, you know, I don't belong in these spaces. But for me, it's not trying to prove to everyone, you know, this is where I belong. It's just proving to myself, no, this is what I'm worth. This is where I dream to be. This is where I belong. And, you know, when I overcome these things, I always get stronger at the end of the day. Regardless, if it wasn't for me, you know, and that's out of my control, then I don't dwell on it. But an adversity for me, I always learn from it and I'm always stronger. I don't let it get the best of me.
Now, you know, being a trailblazer, as I mentioned before, as you are for all the things that you have done and continue to do, what has been the overall reaction, I should say, from the Enoch Cree Nation to see all of the success that you have done and continue to do with your career?
You know, I've been, I experience, you know, a lot of love for my community, especially from a lot of the youth there that I've worked with. You know, to me, it's like I'm not just, you know, representing myself, I'm representing Enoch and, you know, putting it on the map. But there are so much talent that come from Enoch as well. Like, it's not just me, but, you know, being in these spaces brings me a lot of honor because, you know, remember earlier I was saying I was that little girl, you know, winning the Enoch Tiny Tot Junior and Senior Princess. That to me was a big honor because it was for my community. And now I'm, you know, going to be walking the red carpet at these events or being on covers of magazines. But I remember it's not just me, you know, that's me and my community that I'm representing. So it brings me a lot of pride and it reaches out and welcomes me with open arms when I come home. It's, it brings me a lot of strength for sure.
And just to put it beautifully, it takes a community to build character, especially when it comes to Billy Ashley Collibull, who I'm so thankful for having on Voices of Our People here today. Before I let you go, is there anything that you'd like to say to the Enoch Cree Nation and, of course, to all the listeners across the province of Alberta?
I just want to thank Enoch for always having my back when I needed them and, you know, supporting me on my journey. And for any Indigenous youth that are listening out there, or anyone that is Indigenous in general, I just want to say that, you know, I've had to overcome so much in my life to become the strong person that I am. And we all do. But I want you to all realize that, you know, you should love and live fearlessly. You know, love and appreciate yourself for the way Creator made you, because you were made that way for a reason. This mentality, this why not attitude, then you will never set limits for yourself, and you can chase the biggest and even the smallest dreams and make that happen for yourself. So my last thing I would like to say is, you know, the one thing my cookum told me before she passed away was to dream big and show this world what they're made of. And I think that everyone should do that. It's important to dream big and show the world what you're made of, because you never know who's watching. And that person, you might, because they might be like, oh, if they're doing that, then I can do it too. So remember, you never know who's watching.
That was Ashley Colleen Bull from Enoch Cree Nation in Northern Alberta. You're listening to the voices of our people on the Wind Speaker Radio Network. I'm Daniel Barker Tremblay. Next, we sit down with Teresa Snow from Stoney Nakoda First Nation in Southern Alberta. The name given to you, which was Pretty Eagle Woman, what was the meaning behind that name, and who was the elder that gave you that name from your community?
Well, the one I have two Pretty Eagle Woman, which was given to me by Jake House when I became princess for Stoney Nakoda Powwow, Labor Day Classic Powwow. And then in, I think it was 2017, 2016, I was attending Nietzsche Institute, and one of our brother bands, Alexis, there up west of Edmonton, was taking the courses with us. And the classmates from that reserve, from Alexis, kept referring to me as Minikniwia, because that's where I'm from. And so that was the name they gave me, and my adopted brother, J.C. Cardinal, gave me that name of Minikniwia, and so that's the other name I carry. And so that's really, that's like really beautiful, because that shows about our belonging and our identity, and that's how we acknowledge each other, is by gender, by our gender, our terms, our relative, how we're related to each other. And so for me, that's really, it's a beautiful thing to have or to be blessed with. So.
And of course, you know, within your younger years, of course, dating back to the 80s or the 1980s, of course, your experiences that you've had through dance within the Butterfly Fantasy, Shawl Dance, what would you, which would later lead you to become the Goodwill Ambassador. Can you talk about your experience within that that realm, within that cultural dancing within Stoney Nakoda?
Okay, I think like that was something our parents always instilled in us to do, like as we saw the revival of being able to practice our traditions and our customs. Our parents got us into dancing, powwow dancing, and going to celebrations. And within that, it's a whole powwow family that you grow up with and that you still have. Like, I still have a powwow family to this day that I can depend on, that depend on me as well, too. And so with the dancing, it was a way of expressive outlet in a physical capacity, but also emotional too, spiritual and mental. And within that, growing up and being able to travel, and I would first start with drawing outfits out, and then my sister would make them. And then later, as I learned the skill of sewing and beading, I got to make that for family members. I worked with a group in Calgary, helping families work with that, foster kids, and we looked at if they had an Indian name or some of their special gifts that they carried or their colors, and we made outfits. And then later on, it transgressed into being in dance theaters or dance troupes and traveling, and I guess taking on that ability to always be a helper in your community and to share the teachings and be that resilience that young women can see, and be a mentor to them and teach them about the dance and share the stories and be able to create, because creating is art therapy. It's therapy for us, and it's healing. And it allowed me to travel and to still be part of my culture and live my culture and share it. And then I had the opportunity to run for Miss Indian Nations in Bismarck, and I ended up winning and was the first Canadian to win. So that was really a really cool thing, because other Canadians had entered but had never won. And I think it reflected back to our community as being our fathers daughters and being representatives and always trying to be helpers in communities because we were chief's daughter. And so having that, being an ambassador, it came natural because we had people come to the house. We would feed them, help them, and be servants, because when you're in leadership, you serve your people and you help them in whatever capacity. So we learned that at a young age. And so then being an ambassador for nations was, again, having that role in being that voice and breaking those stereotypes of what we normally see that people have about Indigenous people. So it was a way for me, an opportunity for me to break down barriers, to have dialogue and discussion about Indigenous people and about our resiliency.
And of course, you know, with many of the walls that were broken, you went on to also being a part of the Showcasing First Nation Culture and Dance Within the Land of Spirits that toured across Canada. What was that experience like doing that during that time, as well as, you know, laying the groundwork for many others to follow in your footsteps?
Well, that was really an amazing experience and very different, because we lived in Toronto for about 3 months, and I grew up on the res. I to this day, I live out here. I love living out here, but it gave me an opportunity to live in an urban setting, meet other Indigenous groups and family that became family members, adopted family members, dancers, and be able to share our dance. And it was very new at that time. John Kimbell, the first Indigenous conductor, and he actually got to do this Native ballet across Canada. And I think it was a lot of barriers he had to face in getting us to be able to perform across Canada, something you think that should be a no-brainer, but as many challenges back at that time. And so being able to be some of the first dancers to showcase our dance as a form of ballet or a form of intrinsic dance, artistic dance, it was really beautiful. I didn't think I'd get chosen. I auditioned at the Calgary Indian Friendship Center back then. A bunch of us auditioned, and I didn't think we'd get chosen. So I was really shocked and overwhelmed to be able to go dance and perform, because that was my love when, as a teenager, I loved powwows and dancing. And so it was showed me that if you stay strong to your dreams and your goals, you can do them, you can live them, and you have that passion, and hold on to that passion and do that, because if you live your passion, then you don't work in your life. Like, it won't seem like work to you. It's living your passion every day. So, and that's always stuck with me with things I do.
And no words can be more true than that, as well as, being motivational in that regard to, talking about that in that aspect for whatever you set your mind to, in a sense. Now, within the culture, you've also mastered beadwork as an artist after beginning a sewing and beading at a young age for your family members. Can you talk about the importance of learning not only how to bead and sew, but also just to tap into the work that comes with learning about the culture, whether that be beading, sewing, or, you know, making drum kits and stuff like that, to be a part of that within the Stoney Nakoda Nation or the Black, within the culture itself, whether that be Nihewin, Dene, or Blackfoot? How important is it for now the younger generation to be a part of that?
I think it's really important as we see how things are going on in communities, and I think that connection to our knowing our identity and our stories and our dances is really a passageway to healing and recovery for our people, especially for our youth. So many want to dance and take part, but they don't know who to talk to or who to ask and how to get into that mode of practice or that custom of dancing. With what I learned about it and what was taught with me by mentors or like designs passed on to me, and people don't realize that there's designs that are passed on, or designs mean certain thing. And it's like energy, how we put ourselves around energy or people. Everything has energy, and we have to think about that. And that's with the dancing too, knowing the story of the dance, being taught about the dance, learning about the different elements of the outfit. And growing up, I was so blessed to have learned that, or to met people in my life that teach me about things. So, for instance, when I went to the Smithsonian, we got to go to the vault, my nephew and I, Eli, and we got to go to the vault and see all the outfits there and the teachings for them that were shared with us with from Emil Hermanyhorses. He's a curator there. And then I had even a more profound sense of the intentions it is in the beadwork and the dance and the story, the spirit of the outfit and how it carries you and how each item you make with good intentions. There's a reason for it. It's a we had a purpose for everything we did, and it shaped our outfits, but it also told achievements. Like, we'd honor our family, and if they were in really good clothing or really good outfits, it's how much you loved them and how much you could produce for them. For your family to look so good because that's how much you loved them and you honored them in that way. And so I always try to think of that when I'm sharing stories about the dance or how to. It isn't just dance, or it's not just the beadwork that's shown to us. It's things that may come in a vision or in a dream, or things that are passed on, or a story that comes to us. And so beadwork tells the story. As women, we were the beadworkers. We did the quill work. We told our story through beads. It wasn't a written history that Westerners see, but our story is told through beadwork and those beads. And we can even see beads as a sign of resistance now, because we're still beading and we're still telling those stories through beads. We're not going to the oral tradition or the writing. We're not going to the writing tradition of writing everything in a linear way, in a Western way. We're still doing the beadwork. And it's very uplifting in that way. And when I explain that to people and they understand it, okay, well, this is who we are and it is part of our way. And so it's really, I think that's an opportunity that's presented for me to help. And to, if I'm not here and not here to share that knowledge, where does that knowledge go? And so for me, it's always like, what have I learned and what can I share for other people so that they understand that they can carry it on to their youngsters, to their family, to their communities?
And you just echoed words that I've heard from so many elders and so many people that I've spoken to on this show, which is, you know, the importance of passing down the knowledge of, you know, the and the wisdom, and of course the teachings, the most important thing, the education that comes with it as well, of the culture, whether that be from Nihue and Stoney, Blackfoot, Dene. It's all important to know and to pass on to generation to generation to generation. Now, in 2006, and we're going to continue on with the beadwork. In 2006, Teresa also, alongside her nephew Eli Snow, were selected to represent Treaty 7 Alberta and Canada at the annual Folk Life Festival at the Smithsonian Museum in Washington, D.C., showcasing their beadwork and clothing. This was the first time Canada was invited to show. And what? And can you talk about that whole experience of being within the capital of the United States, Washington, D.C.?
That was, yeah, that was, again, another opportunity. Didn't expect it to happen. We got called up to the Royal Alberta Museum. We were referred by another member of Treaty 7, another artisan spokesperson. And so very happy for the referral. Didn't expect it. And we went up there and showed our beadwork and talked about our teachings or our way of learning about it. And so they asked us both to come down because I did more of a contemporary beadwork style at that time and my nephew did a more traditional style. So they wanted to show how it, over family generations, the beadwork is still there and it takes on different segues of being done. And so we went down and it was just, yeah, amazing to go down and be down there and showcase and like to be at the Smithsonian and see the museum and get a tour and all the other artisans we met from there. And there were other groups there. There were basket weavers there and Inuit artist carvers. And so learning from them, and it was an exchange of information and teachings. And again, what we, even though it's different elements that we're making or different items, it's still that teaching of prayers for making what we're going to do, for what we're going to work on, the intentions going into it, and our time and patience and compassion and passion as well, too, for what we're doing. And it was like a whirlwind. We were only there 2 weeks, and we got to do some talks, too, with guests. And again, that was breaking down those stereotypes of Indigenous people that were thought about or that we all do certain things or whatever, and it was breaking that down. But it was also learning about how great our gift is of our dance and our outfits and how we adorned our people and how we took care of each other. And to, it just made that passion even more to create more. And so with that, I've always kept that with me in making things, in making items and working on special projects. If it's not an order, then things I think about, which brought me into making the items that I currently make and work on. It's just, it progressed me. It made the trajectory of working into more things fine-lined and more detailed, and a knowledge of understanding about beads, the journey of beads, how it changed our economy when the beads came in, and the hives, and all the things that go into it. It just made me want to learn more so that I could learn more, so I could share more.
That was Teresa Snow from Stoney Nakoda First Nation on Voices of Our People. I'd like to thank today's special guests for joining us, Ashley Collingbull and Teresa Snow. Tune in next Thursday for more Voices of Our People on the Windspeaker Radio Network.